For those of you that don't know what I do, I work for the Drug and Alcohol Service in Worcestershire. So basically we're commissioned to work with anyone with a problem with drugs or alcohol in their life, or families that are affected by drugs and alcohol, and young people as well. And we're the sort of largest provider of that service in Worcestershire. And really, my role is I cover the Bromsgrove and Droitwich area, and along with a team of about three or four people, we provide services to people so they might come to their GP and say that they've got a problem with substances, with drugs or alcohol, and then we will sort of pick them up from that point and try and support them through making changes to their life. And it's changed quite a lot over the last couple of years, my job. And really what I want to share is about the sort of the last 2 years and how it's changed and the effect that that's had. And potentially also where that might fit in terms of people within the church, whatever, of seeing more of an opportunity that this is an area for them to get involved. So, but what I want us to do is just start by just probably if everyone just kind of closes their eyes just for a minute, and I want you to just create a picture in your mind of someone who might be having a problem with drugs or alcohol. Now, if you're a young person here, what I want you to do is I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to just think about someone around your school or someone who may just, we're in their life, and they may be that their parents are maybe not 100% reliable all of the time, so their moods might change or whatever. And I want you to just imagine if you're a young person and you're in that situation and you had a parent who would come home sometimes and their mood would be quite erratic, and they would one minute be really calm and the next minute they might be shouting at you. Or there might be sometimes when they're really giving you and buying you loads of things which will sound really great, but then at other times they might just suddenly not have any money in the house, and it might be a real hardship to just kind of get food on the table. So if you're an adult, I want you to just think about the areas of someone's life and what might be affected. So I want you to think about how might drugs or alcohol might affect someone's health, how might it affect someone's employment, might they be having some problems with the police or with neighbours, might their moods be up and down. And I just want you to start thinking about different aspects of your life, your own life, your hobbies and your interests. Where would they fit with someone who increasingly the sole focus of their life might be drugs and alcohol? And again, if you're a young person, just think, if your mum or dad suddenly was not thinking about you or your birthday or the next event that was coming up or the hobbies and clubs you were, and how that might impact on you. And the reason I want to do that is because, for me, all of this is about thinking about the person and the wider thing. It isn't about thinking about the substance. It's the impacts it has on the person, on the family, on parents, on brothers and sisters, on friendships. And, yeah, I imagine for quite a few people that they might know or have known of someone where this has been a difficulty. And if you haven't, then just taking a few minutes just to think of all the different areas of your life it might have had an effect on. And now what I want you to do is imagine that you've made a change in that, a significant decision to make some changes. But now try and think about, okay, so you've been doing this thing for a long time and you've caused lots and lots of harms to different areas of your life and you've suddenly decided to make a change. What kinds of areas of help and support might you need? And you can throw out, you can shout out some suggestions. Where might you need help in doing that? Oh, yeah, could be finances, yeah. Could be counselling, yeah. Could be in relationships. Like as in repairing, like damage done. Yeah. Could be in housing. Health. Yeah. So there might be some long-term health implications. Employment. Yeah. And with some of those things, if you think about the long-term effect of being out of work for a long number of years and not having done a lot with your time, about the barriers that that might present, or your health, if you've been doing lots and lots of harm to it and suddenly you stop doing this thing, how you might still have lots and lots of long-term ongoing health things to overcome. And what about for a young person? It doesn't have to be a young person that shouts up, but it can be. What might be some of the changes that suddenly happen for the young person whose parent has decided to make a change? Insecurity, yeah. Not trusting. Angry. Hopeful. Yeah, this time it might be different. Yeah. So a bit of insecurity, but a bit of anger, a bit of confusion, yeah, yeah. So a hoping, but a maybe not sure, heard this before. It can be a really important time for people. And the reason I mention it is because it isn't just an overnight fix. And one of the things that we've been trying to do with the organisation I work for is trying to explain to people, look, when you decide to make this change or you start the process, it can be a long process. And as I say, it can be really hard for the young people that are affected, can be hard for family members to trust again and grow in that trust. And what we've been trying to do is trying to say to people, look, in order to do this along the way, you want support. And we've mentioned all the practical things as well in terms of things like employment and housing and those kind of things and the health stuff. But there's another big aspect of life that gets devastated, and that's just the sense of community and friendships and relationships. So if you have let down lots of family members, then you might find that those relationships don't rebuild easily. They might not have been there in the first place. So one of the things we've been doing is building what we call a recovery community in Bromsgrove. And all that is, that's the term we've given it, but basically all it is that people who have made this decision come together and we run groups, but we also invite people to, anyone who's previously been to our groups or whatever, because they don't stay seeing us forever, but they can come back and they can speak, you know, they can speak and share about how things are going. Because one of the big things is the idea of hope. And if we can create a sense that actually change is possible, because often people are expecting you to fail, but if we can create that change is possible and they can see someone else has made a positive change or is a bit further down the road, then what we're trying to do is just to build a visible community where that happens. So the way we do it is we run groups every week for people which are looking at specific life issues. It might be tackling specific problems. But we also then, every sort of 4 weeks or 6 weeks, we get everyone together and we try and promote this idea of supporting one another, which for me has been really inspiring in terms of being part of and hearing people come back a year down the line and say, I'm still doing all right. And they just touch base just to say that, really. But it's a real encouragement to someone who's just started that journey of making a decision. They're on day two. And they're thinking, yeah, I've got loads of problems ahead of me now because it's a big hill to climb. So, yeah, so that's what we've been doing. So what I want to really talk about today is about how Grace Church might be involved in that, or how that might be interesting for Grace Church. Well, one of the things I've felt is that actually this is about getting people just back into mainstream society who may have been focused solely on substances. So what I've been encouraging and asking is, if anyone has ever been interested in working with people with drugs and alcohol or just coming alongside them, the big thing that people need is just relationships and support and friendship.
So if anyone is interested in just coming alongside and being part of that community, and it can be just in very small ways. I mean, Ben's talked with me about possibly taking some people to play golf or whatever. So it could be something like that. It doesn't, you don't have to be a specialist. It's actually about getting back to doing normal things. And so I'd really be just open it up to anyone that's interested to speak to me, find out, oh, I'm interested. I'd just like to come and find out a bit more. If you personally have been impacted by substances or you know someone who has, then again, come and speak to me, because one of the other things is we're really encouraging for family members to be involved in this as well. So we often have, we don't just have the person who's affected, but we have their, a friend or a relative might come along to the groups and support the person through it. Because for them, it's also about that, that healing process as well, because they've been on this, they've been impacted by this and on this journey as well. And we have also a service for young people. And again, we're trying to sort of see how we can integrate them. We have actually had children of parents that have been through our program who come to sort of appoint milestone celebrations who have come along. So we've had, you know, and that for me has been the high point of doing this work, is that when you've seen actually this is a ripple effect and these children have now got their parents back, whatever. And that, you know, when you're in that environment and you see and hear that happening, then you really do realise the devastating impact, but also the power of what can be done when people start to make changes. The other side is that I wanted to just finish by mentioning was people do ask me, how successful are you with this? And I, it's an interesting question, and I'll finish on this. But they do say, oh, look, how many people get better, or how many people, you know, complete treatment? There isn't an easy answer to that. And I would say that actually, as many people as we see leaving treatment and making changes, there are more people coming in the door. That's the reality of this. But I don't know if anyone, has anyone had that story about what are they called? Little star things on the shore. What are they called? Starfish, yeah, on the shore. Has anyone heard that story? There was a story about a little girl who, there was a big storm and all the starfish get washed up on the shore, and there's just literally thousands and thousands on this beach. And, you know, this little girl is just walking along the beach and she's picking one up and throwing it back into the sea or whatever before it dies. And this old man who thinks he's quite clever comes up to her and says, what are you doing? What a pointless task you're doing. And this little girl sort of looks up at him, and she's quite demoralised by the thought of what he's just said to her, that why bother? There's so many. Why bother? And then she pauses for a second, and then she reaches down and she picks up another one and then just throws it back into the sea. And she goes, well, it matters to that one. And that's the thing for me, is that every time we impact someone, it matters to that person. And that's what matters to God. And so for me, whenever I think about, well, there's just more, there's, you know, and the more we go out there, the more we find that we're connecting in with new people. And we're just thinking, how are we going to do this? How are we going to keep this going? Because actually what we find is that a friend brings someone else along with them, or two people along with them. But actually it does matter to God. Each one matters to God. And I also, what keeps me going is that I know Jesus has said that actually in the end, it does come good. In the end, for a Christian, we know that we have this hope, that every tear is going to be wiped away, that every pain is going to be wiped away. So we know God is faithful in that. So as a Christian, it just means I can afford to spend my life doing this, picking up one starfish and throwing it away, because I know that in the end, God is going to wipe away every tear, and God is going to come back, and Jesus is going to reach out and do what he said he's going to do. So for me, that's what keeps me going doing it. And so success, failure, kind of, although I am interested in doing things better, I'm not particularly, the numbers game isn't that interesting to me. But, it, you know, yeah. So I'll finish there and shut up. But yeah, if you do want to speak to me, I've got some little letters, newsletters that we produce, and some recovery stories. Because one of the things is, any way possible, we want to get that idea that hope, that change is possible. So we've kind of captured people's stories. They're anonymous, but they're all Bromsgrove local people, but they're sort of anonymised. But we're trying to get any way out there for that person who's deciding, not sure whether this is for them, this big change is possible, to get that mess out. So you can have a look at those resources. I'll put them up on the info table at the end. Okay?
I've never had a clap in all my life. No. Thanks. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Anyway, I feel a lot better now. I feel warm inside. Thank you. With what Steve's just said then, if any of you are interested, please do speak to Steve. As he said, there'll be stuff on that table, but you can't get it unless you talk to somebody that's in it sometimes and you catch hold of something. Even him speaking then just makes me think I want to get involved with that. So if you like that, don't waste a moment afterwards. Grab Steve, have a quick conversation, and I'm sure he will be happy to guide you elsewhere. Steve, come on up.
Ben just asked me to talk a little bit about things that have been going on with me, my life. I thought I'd relate that to scheme that I'm involved, which is the Street Pastors. For those of you that aren't aware of Street Pastors, it's an initiative that was set up about 5-6 years ago. It was in response to people's view of the streets of our towns in Britain. Things were going downhill, drugs, alcohol, the way that people were being treated. And one person, Les Isaac, decided that basically enough was enough. And it was time for, if you like, us as Lord's representatives to take the streets back from those that sort of thing are doing that. And slowly, one by one, towns have been taking this up. And it was Bromsgrove's turn. In fact, we're a year old next month. So middle of July, we're actually a year old. So we've been going a year. That's good. A year ago, obviously, we started out not quite knowing how we would be treated or what the response would be on the streets of Bromsgrove. It was quite nerve-wracking to go out. So like the bright blue coats with the bright blue or something fluorescent sign across the back saying Street Pastors. So we're quite visible. And that's obviously the aim, is that for us to be visible. In our, if you like, our weaponry, because one of the things that keeps coming back to myself and others in the Street Pastor team is that it's about putting on the armour of God. And you can read that in Ephesians. Hang on, I'll direct you to it. Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 to 20. It's all about putting on the armour of God. And it's quite funny, because as you put on the coat, put on the cap, put on the rucksack, you feel as though you've put on the armour of God. So we hit the streets about 10:30. And first thing we do is just walk around some of the outer areas of Bromsgrove just to make sure things are okay. So we look at the bus stops, see who's people at the bus stops, make sure that if people are waiting for the last bus, that they're okay. And a few times we come across groups of kids that are sort of hanging around there, not really causing any harm, but just being kids. This sometimes can cause a bit of concern for older people. So we just stand around, just talking to them. And I say, in our weaponry, we have lollipops, we have water, and we have flip-flops. I'll explain those as we go through. As the night gets later, obviously, more crowds come out. And obviously, Friday night is very much for youngsters. When I say youngsters, probably from like 18 sort of thing. I'm not quite that age group yet. So obviously we start walking out and, you know, talking to people, but the aim of Street Pastors isn't to preach. Although we're called pastors, we're not there to preach the gospel. I suppose in one sense we're there to be the gospel, just to show we care, basically. And one of the comments that we use is that what we're here for is to show that God hasn't turned his back on the streets of our towns. Obviously, we're responsible for Bromsgrove, so we look at Bromsgrove, but it's for all the towns. And we try to give hope to people, because 2 o'clock in the morning, sort of thing, especially if it's raining, you come out of Love to Love, you've had quite a bit to drink, it can be quite a scary place, you know. You've had a really good time, and suddenly the night's over for you, so what do you do? You know, you've got the option of a taxi, but sometimes you haven't got the money for a taxi. And then, sort of thing, you know, for a lot of people, they look forward to a Friday night, and when it's over, they've got nothing. And I think that's what strikes us most, is that, you know, it's all about hope, giving people some hope. And I think if I can give some examples of specifically, a couple of weeks ago I was out on patrol, and just before we go out on patrol we have a prayer team. In fact, Steve is a member of the prayer team. We have a prayer team and we have the Axel Street pastor team. We couldn't do what we do without the prayer team. They are an integral part of what we do. So they're in the night base praying for us throughout the whole night. So we're out from 10 o'clock till 4 o'clock in the morning. They're there praying for us through that time. And I actually think the prayer team have got the harder job, actually. and for that week, sort of thing, on the Thursday, I just felt that the Lord, sort of thing, giving me the words from Ephesians about the armour of God. When we got to the prayer team, just before we went out, we sort of think, we go out with prayer, so we stand for a moment and pray, and then we go out. And then suddenly, someone else had the same words about the armour of God, which I thought was pretty cool. And then as we were out, from time to time, we just ring back to the night base just to tell them what's going on. But actually this time, the night base rang us and said, we've got a word of prophecy, that we just got this feeling that there's someone out there tonight with an injured left arm that needs your help. So we thought, right, okay then. So that night we were looking out for people in slings, sort of thing, or behind the back, or sort of thing, you know, and like, we're spotting away, trying to see if we could see this person with an arm in a sling. And sort of thing, by about 3 o'clock, we hadn't seen anything. And then we were in this conversation with two guys. The one guy worked in Asda, and he was saying, yes, my life's been really good, sort of thing. It's, you know, it's been hard at times. He said, I shouldn't be here, really. He says, because when I was a child, I had a stroke, and that stroke affected my left side of my body. I shouldn't be here. Now, at 3 o'clock in the morning, we're quite tired. We hadn't made the connection that injured left arm was actually this guy with a stroke that had injured his left arm. But we suddenly realized how much this combines people. You know, the prayer team, the street pastor team, it's not just this church, it's all the churches in Bromsgrove. And together united, it's such a powerful force. And already we can see that the effect that it's had with Bromsgrove. When we speak to the youngsters out, they're saying, we're so glad that you're here. And something else I just wanted to share with you is that... I was out Friday night, and this guy, he came out of Love to Love. He was quite drunk. As he came out, he says, oh, don't mind me, so I'm just going to throw up. I went, okay then. So I went to walk away. I thought, well, I'll let him throw up. and he said, oh, I was hoping for some sympathy. I went, okay then. I'm not sure whether you want me to rub your back or what, sort of thing, you know. And I said, well, do you want some water? I've got some water with me. He said, okay, I'll have some water. And so I gave him some water. So I've been standing a little bit back from him. And then it just got into a conversation. And he said, well, why do you do this? I said, because we want to help. And that's the main thing. We want to help. We want to make sure that people are safe, that they get home from their nights out. Okay, perhaps with a hangover the following morning, but, you know, nothing worse. And he was saying, I couldn't do that. He said, you know, says, what do you do it for society or wherever? I says, well, as a Christian, we believe that we care. And we're just trying to show that, you know, that there are people that, you know, do want to do this. And he said, well, I said, I'm a Buddhist. I said, well, okay then. He says, but we still care whether you're a Buddhist, whether sort of thing, we're here to help, we're not judging. And he went, okay then. And so, you know, and it's something like that that stretches across anything. It doesn't matter where the person we're talking to, whether they're a Buddhist, whether they're an atheist. The important thing is that we're showing everyone that we care. And it's quite funny as well, because the power of prayer, I mean, obviously in the Bible about the power of prayer, but we see it quite a lot with the street pastors. And again, sort of thing, we came back to the night base for a quick cup of tea and prayer. And I just felt sort of thing God saying, you know, that when you count along the line, sort of thing, there might be four of you, you see, but it's actually a fifth one. And that's God himself. And I think it's obviously that, you know, sort of thing, that vision. I thought, well, do I share it? Is that just me? Or do I share it? So I thought, well, I'll share it. And as I shared it, one of the prayer team jumped up and said, I've had that word, I've had that word. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, in Moses, sort of thing, Moses was speaking to the Lord, and the Lord said, sort of thing, that I will be with you. And Moses said, well, if you're not with me, I'm not going, sort of thing. I just felt that, you know, that connection. And again, that's, if you want to read that, that's in Exodus chapter 4, verses 11 to 12. And also in chapter 35, 14 to 16, where, again, Moses relies on the Lord. Now, I'm not saying on Moses or doing anything like Moses, but, you know, Moses, again, was someone who didn't want to do what he was doing. But God said, no, you're going to do it. But you'll do it with me. And I think that's the important thing to remember, is that when we're called to do the work, we're not there alone. I think that's, let's just make sure. We're not there alone. If you need a word, God will give you the word. If it's an action, God will give you the action. And from every time we see that, you know, we go out, we haven't got a plan when we go out. We've got a sort of route that we go round. But apart from that, you know, the night unfolds and wherever it is, it is. But every time we go out with the confidence that God is with us. I just wanted to share that. And also, I suppose the experience of street pastors has, I suppose, flowed into my own life, that you get not an arrogance, but a confidence that when the time is right, the God will show me. And, you know, from time to time, that I think everyone probably experiences at work, that, you know, they want to share it, but rather than jumping up and saying, look, I'm a Christian, let's talk about the Bible, that's not always the appropriate way. You know, and it's, how do you get this into a conversation that you're a Christian and you want to save them? And for me, what I found was that just wait, the Lord will show you. And picking up from what Paul spoke about last week, that there's a time at work where, you know, there's a conversation and there's a couple of guys there. One of them was my client, sort of the top of the client. There was one of the guys on site. And they were saying all about religion, sort of thing, cause more wars than anything, and who wants to, sort of thing, be, you know, religion. And, I mean, usually, I mean, I don't participate, I just let them carry on, but this time, something was saying, you just need to respond. So I responded. It wasn't forced, it was just the natural, well, actually, what you need to realise is that there's religion and there's faith. and I have faith in Christ, which doesn't mean to say I have a religion. That sort of stopped them in the tracks. I thought, okay, let's see how this goes. But we then started talking, and the one guy said, okay then, says, you're a Christian. Jesus came from the Middle East. Why aren't they all Christians? I thought, that's a good question. You know, it's times like this that when you think about how am I going to talk about my faith, it's that, do I read the Bible, study the Bible so much that I know every single thing about the Bible? Because that's not possible. People spend their lives doing that. You know, so you just have to trust that when you, not so much challenged, but when you asked, it'll be given to you. And sure enough, I had the answer. And the answer was, again, going back to Moses, just talking about how Moses gathered up the people from Egypt, and sort of thing, and saying, well, you know, modern day Middle East, you know, we've all heard of like the Shiites on the news. I says, well, that's just a tribe of people. I says, in the Bible, when you read the Bible, the Old Testament, you've got them all. You've got the Midianites, the Levites, the Yidites, the Cushites, all the ites, including the Israelites. And again, sort of thing, they looked and said, well, okay then. And the one guy says, do you know what? He says, I spend a lot of time in hotels. And I says, well, look in your hotel. You should have a Gideon Bible. He says, actually, I did, and we have. I said, okay then. I says, well, start reading. He says, the Old Testament, Moses. I says, that's a good place to start. And he says, well, actually, I've been thinking about that because I go to pub quizzes, and the questions that I can't answer are the ones about the stories in the Bible. And I says, well, there you go then. And it's, you know, it was natural, you know, and, you know, rather than condemning, how dare you talk about the Bible and pub quizzes in the same sentence, you know, it's, if you get some talking, if you get some reading and asking questions, does it matter? And it's the same on the streets as a street pastor. You know, we're not there to judge. We're there to help, whatever. And as I say, it's been amazing. And, I just, you know, if other people want to get involved, then, you know, there's myself, there's Steve, Matt Thompson as well. He's also there. So it's growing, and we could always do with more street pastors and prayer team members. And, thank you very much.
Okay, and just to reiterate, do speak to Steve if you want to know any more about that. It's a good thing. Like I said, it is growing, and the reputation of the people is growing in Bromsgrove as well for the better. So that is a good thing. Please speak to Steve. And now.
Good afternoon. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Richard, and with Julia, we lead one of the life groups here at Grace Church. We've been coming here for a few years. And I'm also, along with that Richard over there, planning the pub quiz in October. So we are going to have a round on Moses and the Old Testament. So you have been warned, get reading, and hopefully your teams will do really well. I'll keep this reasonably brief. I've had an interesting couple of months. I was reminded as we were singing earlier on, there was a great line in one of the worship songs we were singing, which is, who brings our chaos back into order? Which is kind of, very poignant in terms of a lot of the things we've been talking about, some of the issues we've been thinking about. Who brings our chaos back into order? So, late last year, early this year, I was having a pretty frustrating time at work, not really enjoying it, not getting the best out of it. So it came to the 10th of April. I remember lying on the bed in the evening. I'm not the most expressive of people when I'm worshipping or praying, but for once I actually lay on the bed and put my arms out and said, God, give me a sign. On the 11th of April, I went in for a meeting in London, and apologies to those of you who already know the outcome here. I was told that basically my services were no longer required by my employer. which I can laugh about now as well, which has brought many good and bad things into life and kind of brought a lot of things into perspective. So it's obviously meant a lot of change in thinking, a lot of change in those things. I was told kindly by my employer, we'll put you on gardening leave. Not that my garden looks any better after 2 months, I have to say. So I'm in this strange situation that I'm well looked after through the summer, but now trying to find another job, which is going reasonably well. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that experience and what it's been like for me going through that, and I'll be pretty brief about it. What has really struck me, it's a funny thing, if you know, sort of confession is good for the soul. So here's my confession today. It'll come to no surprise, as no surprise to my family. I quite enjoy being the centre of attention. You know that, Adam. However, I absolutely hate being made a fuss of, and I struggle even more when it comes to receiving help and sort of doing those sorts of things. And clearly, in a situation like this, you need to take the help that's on offer, and you need to take the help from God and from everyone. So that's been a real time of learning for me, and a real wake up. Some of the words, some of the messages that people have had from the Bible, I just want to touch on, because hopefully in someone somewhere here, this will mean something for you as well. In Psalm 47 verse 4, it says, "He chose our inheritance for us." So kind of what lies ahead and, you know, what we are to receive. God chose that for us. And that applies to every single one of us here, as it does for me. However, on the humility side, in Psalm 143 verse 10, somebody brought us a word, you know, "Teach me to do your will." And you have to stop and say, right, you know, God, what's happening in my life? Where is this going to go? And, you know, God, please teach me to do your will. I don't think I'm alone as a man, in that work becomes quite a big thing and quite a big part of your identity. And so when you suddenly have that all those pieces, all that big chunk of the jigsaw taken out, you start to, you know, when you're on the low of the roller coaster, you start to think, hang on, what does the picture look like? What's God's picture for me? But God does say to us, you know, teach me to do your will. And in Ecclesiastes 3 verse 1, everything that happens in this world happens at the time God chooses. Yeah, you know, as a lovely poem by a favourite poet of mine, Christian poet Paul Cookson, called "The Timing on God's Watch is Always Perfect." I don't wear a watch, so I kind of struggle when with some of those things. But everything that happens in this world happens at the time God chooses, and that's a message for every one of us. Claire gave me a lovely word when I was prayed for. You know, I found it a bit hard to go, yeah, I'd like to be prayed for. And of course, you know, when you do that, you then get all this fantastic encouragement. So if you are one of those people, like me occasionally, who thinks, you know, there must be people who need praying for more than me, or, you know, I can't possibly qualify for the top 10 of people in need of prayer, just ask for prayer, because God will speak to you and God will help you in your situation. And Claire said, in 1 Kings chapter 3, Solomon's prayer for wisdom. And think about that. You know, what are the things you need? What are the things you need to think about? So thank you, Claire. I have been praying a lot for that. I'm not sure whether I've made any progress at all, but I have been praying for that. And similarly, I know when Julia was praying with somebody, a couple of things. One about the Israelites out in the desert, in that, that, you know, they had enough manna for today, and then on a Friday they got 2 days worth, so they were okay for the holy day. But that thing of, don't start going leaping ahead and rushing to conclusions and thinking about, well, if this, that and that happens, then what am I going to do in 5 years and 3 months and 21 days time? It's all going to come crashing down. So, you know, God does provide, and you know, in Matthew chapter 6, verse 34, don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow will have enough worries of its own. That's what Jesus had to say. So, you know, I've had loads of encouragement and loads of stuff that's really spoken to me. And Ben did phone me up a number of weeks ago and said, could you speak on Sunday about some of your experiences? And I was doing Max Impact that Sunday. And he phoned again this week, and I thought, well, God, you're telling me something that I probably ought to say yes. I am hugely, hugely grateful for all the support I've had here and the encouragement I've had from people. You know, in our life group, we've got a number of situations where people have got challenging times, and we've really seen prayer in action. We've seen the power of prayer working. You know, so I think as a whole church, we should keep that prayer going. I've suddenly become, you know, time rich by name as well as time rich by nature. And I'm hugely grateful for all this time. I've suddenly found situations where I can help people, in all sorts of different situations, which has been, a blessing and a bit of an eye opener to me, about how much I must have been missing. I'm hugely grateful for my family and my friends. I don't normally get emotional on these things. We've got a lovely home, and that's something that we love to share with people. And I think when you think of all the situations in the world, and I know some people in some incredibly challenging situations, just the things that we take for granted, like Steve talked about earlier, you know, that whole sort of network stuff that we just assume everybody has, you know, I am hugely grateful for and thankful to God for. So opportunities. I got the great opportunity to have a curry with Steve and Paul and see what I can try and do to help with setup and making a practical difference. And if you think you can make a practical difference, then please say yes. But please don't avoid me now if I come towards you in the next few weeks and you think I'm going to ask you to help. So that, you know, out of every crisis comes opportunity. I put two ideas into Ben's box, Ben's famous box, and one involves curry, which you'll see is a recurring theme already. The other involves St. Basil's, which is a youth homelessness charity in Birmingham, North Worcestershire. I'm quite involved in that, and those of you who've been to Bromsgrove Station, you've probably never realised there's a setup there where there are about 12 units of accommodation, as there are in Redditch, as there are being redeveloped in Kidderminster. And you know, homelessness shouldn't be part of growing up, but for about 1,000 16 to 25 year olds in the Midlands, it impacts them every year. There'll be more on that in due course. So I guess that's all I wanted to say. One eye on the clock. However, if there's something you've heard in that speaks to you, just go and pray about it. And just worshipping today, I always remember my mate Steve said he went to a particular church. This is another Steve. And he said, it was a year in that church before I heard anybody tell me that Jesus died for me and that God loves me. So I always take the chance to say, wherever you think your life is at, however happy or unhappy you are, God loves you and Jesus died for you. And stealing Steve's line, just to reiterate, whatever you may think about that, it matters to God.
Okay, just to conclude, the three guys that spoke, anything that they have said that you're interested in knowing more about, please do ask them. Why it's encouraging is that is a snippet into three people's lives as they are walking and following Jesus. So if you tenfold that, twentyfold that, thirtyfold that, to everybody in Grace Church, there's a lot of people making a difference where they're at. And you can start seeing that as a body of people, and when we're working with other churches in the town as well, a body of people, we got a big scope to serve people in the community as members of Grace Church. and it is very exciting. So thank you. If you...